Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you with the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Megan Greenwood. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Adrian.
So you are the founder of Greenwood Brews, and you're up to big things. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about the brewery and where you're headed.
Yeah, so we just launched in 2017. We are an Arizona-based brewing company, all woman-owned, and we actually just completed a successful Kickstarter a couple of weeks ago, and we are launching our brewery in downtown Phoenix, brewery, tap room, beer garden, whole great environment in downtown Phoenix later this year, hopefully by the summer, fall of this year, 2019.
This is phenomenal. I want to hear more about the brewery and about your plans going forward, but you've been brewing for a while. This isn't like you just started with the Kickstarter campaign. So take us back. How did you start brewing beer?
I'm actually an industrial engineer by degree. I was working in corporate America. I've been working in corporate America since I graduated college. I started homebrewing. I received a homebrew kit, a 5-gallon kit for my birthday about 6 years ago. And I started homebrewing in my kitchen with my roommate and my neighbor, and just totally a hobby, and really fell in love with it. We ended up building a microbrewery in my garage that was a 1-barrel microbrewery. And some people, some breweries even today, they brew with a 1-barrel system. It's small, but it's pretty usable. So we built the microbrewery in my garage. I had 8 beers on tap. If you were one of my friends at that time, you had a lot of great beer in your fridge too.
And this is because for people who aren't beer or brew aficionados, a barrel is large, right? Tell us about a barrel.
Yeah.
What's a 1-barrel brewery?
Barrel means 31 gallons is what we brew at once, 31 gallons of beer. And at the time, we were actually splitting the batch up into 4, what you call carboys, which is basically just a big glass container. And we were fermenting the beer with 4 different processes. So using 4 different ingredients or 4 different additions, what we call dry hopping. At the end of each batch, we had 4 different brews, basically. So we were making recipes and just really enjoying brewing. It was a really great neighborhood activity. I was actually brewing in Chandler, Arizona, in my house and in my garage. At the same time, I was working in corporate America. I was working in renewable energy. That's actually what got me out to Arizona. And I was having all of my really great, honest conversations over beer. I mean, we were even talking before we started, and it's like, okay, it's just like we're having a conversation over a beer. That's actually exactly what we breathe, is having great conversations over beer, because it's so true. You have really honest, raw conversations over craft beer, or I do.
For sure. I mean, this is the thing about beer. I'm a cultural anthropologist. I'm fascinated by human beings. And I've also done some time as an archaeologist in the Middle East, studying ancient civilizations and ways of life. Beer is one of the oldest beverages known to humans. You go back in ancient Mesopotamia, what's now modern day Iraq, Hammurabi's Code, which is one of the oldest written inscriptions ever found anywhere, has a whole section in it on beer. Beer is connected to humanity in a pretty profound way.
Yeah. And I think then it was even for survival, probably more than anything, when you're working all day and what was it? You're burning like 5,000 calories a day was like the average human. Beer was actually supplemented for water so that you were increasing your calorie intake as well as enjoying your time too.
There's also many places in the world today where beer is cheaper and safer than bottled water.
Yeah.
So it's necessary for life in some form or another. As an engineer, right? You were doing engineering things. When did your personal love of beer begin?
Well, I'm from Iowa, the Midwest, yeah. And beer is the beverage of choice for almost everyone, for an alcoholic beverage of choice. I would say the big beers are the most popular, but beer in general, you don't buy beer in 24 packs. It's all 30 packs. People consume a great amount of beer in Iowa, or at least where I'm from in Iowa. And so I grew up on beer in college. I mean, that was what we drank. And I think at the same time as I was going through college, craft beer started to become accessible. and was accessible by the keg, but also by the bottle in small bars and restaurants all over rural Iowa. And that was, I think, the first time that we really saw the Sierra Nevada. We saw the Boston Beer Company. We saw New Belgium. You know, we saw the new big craft being something that we could actually drink. So we were starting to dabble in college. We're like, what is this great beer that's actually not watered down and tasteless, you know? So it was definitely in college, I think the end of my college years, that it became fascinating to me, or at least just really fun. And I was in engineering. It was mostly male dominated. I think the statistics was 80% men, 20% women when I was going through engineering school. And so a lot of my friends were men, but that was just because that was my schooling. That was who I was studying with. So we would drink beer. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I hope that I actually was a little bit instigating the beer drinking with my guy friends, but I think that could have had something to do with it too, was the fact that since my college years, I've worked in all male-dominated industries, which is most industries at the time.
That's right. And today, even, I think, to a certain extent, I mean, there's certainly another conversation about making STEM training, science, technology, engineering, math, more diverse, not just in gender, but in other ways, making it more reflective of the society that all of the companies doing STEM work actually exist in. You talk on your website about the power of the purposeful pint.
Mm-hmm.
There's something more to this than just beer, but at the same time, there's also some science-y stuff involved. Right now, you're an engineer, not a chemist, but brewing is a little bit of art and a little bit of science. Talk about the actual brewing itself, what you had to learn and what that was all about.
In any industry, you know, you're constantly learning, and I'm still a novice in brewing, I feel, even though I've been brewing now for over 5 years. To me, it started like cooking, because we were basically cooking in my kitchen. Then as I graduated into our brewery in the garage, I realized that it was a lot more engineering. It was a lot more mechanical and electrical. And I'm an industrial engineer, which means that I'm a manufacturing engineer. So that means that I really make processes more efficient. Even now, as we're building the brewery, it's actually really exciting to me because I'm back to my industrial engineering roots. I'd say it's a harmony between art, like you said, really creativity and building recipes and chemistry. And then, I mean, almost every single discipline of engineering, you've got electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, industrial engineering, chemical engineering. You would never think about this as a traditional engineering occupation, but I'm actually working more in engineering now than I probably have since I graduated from engineering school. I graduated and I wanted to go into sales, actually. So my path kind of went more into having these great conversations and important conversations, sales conversations, over beer with my clients, which were mostly men, with my bosses, which were mostly men. Not saying that I wouldn't have taken a woman out with for a craft beer. I totally would have. But beer was just the choice, was just the beverage of choice. So where we talk about the power of the purposeful pint, say that 10 times fast.
Right. That's a tricky one. Power of the purposeful pint.
Is because we really believe that beer is an avenue for really great conversations. And as a woman in beer and a woman understanding how important it is to be able to drink beer and have these great conversations over beer, I want to get more women into craft beer to be able to have these great conversations. And when I was in sales, I was kind of feeling like, even though I was homebrewing, I was a little bit intimidated by the craft beer world and ordering beer. I thought I was probably not alone in that feeling. And even though I was brewing triple Belgians in my house, like, I still felt intimidated. And so I really want to create, first of all, I loved brewing and I still love brewing. It's my favorite part of this business. It's actually also probably the least amount of work that I do is actually brewing now. I completely fell in love with brewing. And then I also fell in love with this idea of being able to offer something to help another person feel more comfortable and more confident in a situation over a pint, right? So we believe that great conversation is had over our Avenue beer. And if you have an empowering conversation, then that conversation could create change. I mean, that's kind of, I feel like it's a little bit what you guys talk about here, and having just really raw conversations and maybe unusual topics, or really getting real, I guess, here,
yeah,
even
absolutely.
On air here. And we believe the same thing.
Well, there's so much richness available when we drop our pretense and we connect with people in a meaningful way. And our goal at Business Radio X is not only to focus on stories that might fall through the cracks in a scandal-driven, polarized media landscape. We also want to give people the opportunity to come into our studios together and have meaningful conversations over a microphone. Maybe we should have it over a beer. There's something that you are onto with this. First of all, I didn't realize it would be quite the same phenomenon, but certainly in wine, we see that there's a level of intimidation and snobbery that has been part of that culture for a long time. I never realized, but of course it makes good sense that craft beer could have a similar kind of phenomenon. So many different terms, different varieties, different things, and someone might feel intimidated by that. Can you unpack that a little bit more? Because clearly your mission includes making this accessible to everyone and to women in particular. Talk about that complexity and intimidation and kind of what you're doing with not only your actual beverages, but with your messaging and your marketing and the conversations you're having with people to really break this open.
The difference between wine and beer when you're having an experience, I think, is that when you go to taste wine, it's really common to say, oh, I'll have a taste of that, and really kind of explore before you buy your bottle of wine. And there is a little bit of snobbery in that too. And sometimes it's intimidating to ask your server if you can have another taste because you didn't really like the last two. But I think with beer, it's kind of following a similar path. And if you don't know the difference between our styles of beer or, you know, types of beer, then I think you almost feel, you're almost, in some places, you're almost blocked at the door. You walk in and you get a server that knows a lot about beer and you order Michelob Ultra and they're like, you can basically get out. And it's, that actually happens, you know, but some people are just like, I just want something that's going to make me feel comfortable and in my environment, something that's reliable, something that's safe. And some people, women in particular, are calorie conscious and are like, I don't necessarily want to have a 350 calorie IPA at dinner and with my dinner. I'd rather have something light. And so I think that the stigma kind of comes with the craft beers world is, or sometimes it can, is that there's this just intimidation factor around understanding all the different styles and really what to order. I guess maybe that's where it starts. Or I think that's where it started for me. And so really Greenwood Brewing, what we try to do is create a really approachable beer, really a non-intimidating environment, and have really easy, accessible ways of people to taste beer and to come in and feel like, I don't know a dang thing about beer, but I know that I can come here and learn about it. We are very strong about beer education, and we call it beer education. And we even, in the with the brewery, once we open, we have brew days where you come, you brew with us, you learn about beer, you learn about how to taste beer. And in just like a, if you want to learn about beer, we'll provide this beer education. If you don't, we are going to be a reliable beer on a menu. When you go out and you're having a conversation with a client or your boss, and you don't want to have to worry about what you're going to order or feel intimidated by the server who's going to, you know, and sometimes it's all in our head. Like, we don't even, we, it's not actually reality, but we're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to order. I don't know anything about beer. And so I'm going to feel really intimidated when this person comes up. But what I want to create with Greenwood Brewing is something that someone, can be man or woman, looks at the menu, says Greenwood Brewing, sees Greenwood Brewing. She knows that we made it with her in mind, or a novice beer drinker in mind. And they're like, awesome, Greenwood Brewing. Now I feel confident. I don't have to really worry about it, because sometimes beers and wine, it doesn't have to be rocket science. You know, it doesn't have to, we don't have to know everything about it to enjoy it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the business side of brewing for a minute. So you are currently a contract brewer. Talk a little bit about that, what that means, and then also what's going to change, what's going to be different once your own facility is in place later this year?
Yeah, later this year. Yep. So contract brewing is actually not new. But it's very unique in the sense that it's mostly a proof of concept. And what I mean by that is we are able to get our beer out into the hands of consumers and understand if people even want to drink this or people even believe in what we're trying to accomplish before we build a brewery. And it's both a proof of concept in the sense of market research and market understanding, as well as being able to be financeable and getting a loan from a bank and being able to tell them, hey, people actually like this product and they follow it and they'll back us. And so contract brewing is for us, for Greenwood Brewing, is a means to an end because it was basically for that, this proof of concept. But it's not new. So what I mean by that is Boston Beer Company, for example, was a contract brewery. Sam Adams, when they launched, it was a contract brewery. So that means that we use another brewery's equipment and we collaborate with them. Sometimes contract brewing means that you do brew on their system. Sometimes it means that they brew everything for you. In our case, it's a little bit of both. We are at most of the brews, and I like to be the brewer, like I said before. So we brew with another brewery on their system, and they let us use their equipment and their excess equipment to be able to produce our beer and get it out into the market. So we have our two beers right now, Her Story Brew and Forward IPA. And both of those are out in around 50 locations around Arizona, which is great. I mean, that's exciting for us. But it is still small, but that's mainly because we are doing incredibly small volume at the moment. And like I said before, it's because we're using someone else's equipment and someone else's capacity, which they want to use too. So
yeah, of course. So there must be a lot of tight time frames here as you take your beer through the process. I'm not enough of a beer nerd to know about it, but I know there's multiple stages in the system. Is a room full of a lot of different kinds of equipment, different vats and various types of things, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to oversee that process, but then you probably have to get it out of there and into bottles and kegs and everything and distributed. So a brew is not just pouring some stuff in and waiting for the magic to happen. Mm-hmm. There's a lot involved.
Right. Yeah. So a brew day is at least a 12-hour day for us. The last time we brewed, I think it was like a 17-hour day or 18-hour day brewing. And then you wait for the beer to ferment. And so it ferments in those big vats that you were talking about, a big fermenter. And it can ferment up to 6 weeks, depending on, or longer, depending on what style you're brewing. For sour beers now, which are really really popular, those can sit in a barrel for years. But for the majority of the beer, it's for an ale, we see about 2 to 3 weeks time between the fermenting and the conditioning of the beer and getting it out the door. But then that starts a whole nother process of distribution, which is a whole other thing,
right? Yeah, because it involves vendors and middle people, and perhaps, or are you selling? Are you in that sales role now that you wanted back as an engineer? And how do you like it?
Yes, I am definitely in that sales role. That is, I will. If you own a restaurant or a bar, you will be hearing from me. I do love sales, but I love creating this business, and it's right now. It's kind of a challenge to navigate the sales role and the growth role. We're very in our infancy stage and we're building a brewery. So it's kind of like this balance right now between current day-to-day work and working on the future of Greenwood Brewing. So we do have, actually in Arizona, we have an awesome system. It was actually recently changed. We have the ability to self-distribute as a brewery. And so our microbrewer's license is really great in this state. It's different every state. And so we can actually distribute, sell directly to a client. And then I use a distributor delivery service called Manuel Brothers, and he delivers our beer for me. I started delivering when I first started Greenwood Brewing, when we were first contract brewing. I was brewing, selling, delivering, everything. And delivering is a lot. It's a difficult process. I didn't realize how much time was actually in delivering. It was an entire day to deliver like four kegs around the valley, you know. And I was limited to my area. I was limited to my time. I was like, this needs to change. Like immediately, yeah. It was within the first week. I was like, no, can't. Well,
if you think about beverages at scale, they're heavy.
Oh, yeah.
They're somewhat fragile. The temperature controls,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, just getting around.
Yeah.
You know, on the one hand, we have a delightful web of interconnected cities and highways and things that make up the Metro Phoenix area. And at the same time, it's spread out. And
mm-hmm.
if you sell your beer to somebody that's far away, that's a regular trip for somebody.
Right.
To keep their stocks replenished.
Right. So that was really huge when we actually found a delivery service that was able to sell our beer, and they work with really nano breweries, and they're awesome. But yeah, that's so then, you know, then we're making sure that we get our beer into as many locations as possible is really the goal right now, while being constrained a little bit by the volume that we can create. So so this is the reason why we are building the brewery, is because that was always the goal. It was once I actually left corporate America in July of last year. This was my side business for the launch of Greenwood Brewing, the first 6 months of us distributing beer. I had to support myself somehow, so I was still working in corporate America. And so I left, and then with the knowledge that people were wanting to drink our beer, and this was something that I wasn't just developing in my mind, it was actually proven. So the brewery is always the end goal. And we just launched our location after our Kickstarter. We're building on 5th Street and Roosevelt in downtown Phoenix. I absolutely love downtown Phoenix. I think that we're on the brink of something huge and exciting. And I actually moved. I fell in love with downtown after going to a First Friday 1 year. And I was living in Chandler. And that's, like I said, that's where we were brewing. And I fell in love with downtown so much that I put my house up on Airbnb, vacation rental by owner, and I moved to downtown Phoenix and left my house. And that's where I actually started Greenwood Brewing, was at that time when I moved to downtown. And I wanted to build my business there. I really love the history of downtown and the artistic feel and the people and everything, the community.
I mean, it's certainly an incredible location, right in the heart of Roosevelt Row,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got the First Friday, which is, I think, one of the biggest and best First Fridays in the country. It's been in place for a long time. I don't know the exact details about it. And you're right in the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about the location itself and what your plans are. I saw some drawings.
Yeah.
It's an interesting set of spaces,
yes.
connected together.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a really cool design. And when we first launched the beer, so we launched Her Story, which people ask me if it's her story, like history, like what we were talking about, but from a woman's perspective, or if it's her story. And it's both. And we actually share people's stories on our website and our social media, and it's really fun and engaging. But we launched Her Story and in March of 2018. And I got a call from Changing Hands First Draft Book Bar, if you've ever been there. It's a bar and a bookstore. And the beer is called Her Story. So they were like, we need this beer on tap. You know, it just completely makes sense. It's Her Story in a book bar. And so the owner of one of the owners of Changing Hands actually reached out and was like, we have this space in downtown Phoenix and we want to turn it into a beer garden. And I was like, well, I'm actually looking for a brewery location. So let's talk. So we actually met in May or June of last year. And we started talking about this location and what we could do with it. And it's so right now what sits on the property is made boutique, which is all Arizona made awesome art and anything for your house that you want. And then there's an art studio called iLounge that is on the property. And that's actually in our gallery, and that's actually staying on the property. And then there's another a nonprofit organization right now that's actually moving. And so we are kind of transforming this property. And then there was a vacant parcel just west of these two buildings. And it's just used as a parking lot right now. So it's actually an infill project for the city. The city sees it as an infill project, meaning that everything around it, all the parcels around it are developed, and this is a vacant parcel that we can develop. So we are building the brewery on this vacant parcel, a new build, and then there will be a little pocket park on the property as well. So it'll be this luscious garden, so kind of Greenwood garden, which I think sounds just great. And then we have our tap room, which will also be in the same building as iLounge, which will be this really cool interactive space where people can grab a beer, view art, go to the retail store, you know, kind of just, it's almost like a little destination location. And then there's a patio that's existing right in front of Made. If you've ever been to Made or iLounge, there's a big patio, and we're really livening that patio up and making that all part of Greenwood Brewery. And it's really a gateway into Fifth Street and a gateway into downtown. And with a hope that Fifth Street will become this area for restaurants and bars and nightlife and daytime life and art studios and just a whole area where we can have a lot of people come, park for the day, walk around, view art, drink beer, you know, just really have a really lively area. I think we're on the brink of that. So it's a perfect location. I'm really excited about it. If you can't tell, I'm very excited about it.
It's something worth being excited about. And, you know, for cities like Phoenix, and in which development has been uneven, there's been fits and starts over time and boom and bust periods, you know, over the history of the city, as in many urban areas, infill is an important phenomenon. This puts you in conversation, obviously, with not just the city, but the neighborhood, mm-hmm. With other organizations, with, you know, historic, in the case of Roosevelt Row, with their governing nonprofit body, right?
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding it, navigating that landscape? I mean, obviously, this is a kind of project people could get excited about. Has there been pushback and any concerns that you've had to address along the way?
Not yet, and knock on wood, but no, Roosevelt Row was very welcoming. Evans Churchill was very welcoming to us. I think they see this area as being a destination location too. They want people to be coming to Roosevelt Row, and a brewery that has great values and good missions. I mean, I'm biased, obviously, but they can get on board with that, and they have. So we've had nothing but great feedback so far from the city, from Roosevelt Row, from Evans Churchill, and I guess we'll see how everything goes. There was concern about the art gallery and what was going to change. And of course, everybody should have concern. This was an arts district. This is still an arts district, which is why I love downtown. And I'm so excited to be able to continue to incorporate and complement the art gallery. I think that the brewery will do that. It will also allow for the art gallery to be open longer and having staff to actually be there, which I think is just going to make it even more successful.
Sounds like a great collaboration.
Yeah.
So you're up to a lot of different things here. You're up to something locally. You're up to something within the industry itself. Do you have peers in other locations? Is there a network? Is there a movement toward women-centered brewing business environment? Or are you leading the way? What's the landscape look like?
So I started Greenwood Brewing because I looked for that and couldn't find it. So I think there is. There's actually a women's organization. It's a foundation, a nonprofit foundation, and it's called Pink Boots Society. And what they do is what we do. I'm part of the foundation. We raise funds to send to educate women and to sponsor women to go into beer education and brewing education and to get really more women into craft beer and brewing and brewery ownership. And that is something that's nationwide. We send women to Germany to learn. We send women to California, to New Hampshire. And it's a program that's to grow the women who are in the industry. Women-only owned brewing companies is only 2% of brewing companies. Women-owned brewing companies is 20%. So, and these are, I think, 2016 numbers. So that we're obviously growing. So that number could be different now, or probably is different now. So 78% of the breweries that are in the U.S. today are male-only owned,
yeah.
Which is, so 2% is very small.
So let me get that straight, because those numbers went by kind of fast. It's 20% of breweries have women owners.
Yes. A woman owner.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then 2% are owned by women only.
Right.
So you're really the minority within the minority.
Right. Right. So that means that that 78% are man-only owned, 2% are women-only owned, and 20% are a collaboration of both.
Right.
And we see those similar numbers with Arizona. There's one brewery that I'm not sure is, she might be also women-only owned in Arizona, but there is not a lot. There might be one other. So it's very, very small. And there's a few breweries around the country that have similar marketing strategies, I guess, but nothing exactly like what we're trying to do. So there's a few. There's one in Florida and Colorado and in Northern California that I know of, but it's a very small group of us, I think.
Well, it's fascinating to me because you're touching on so many things. You're touching on business operations. You're touching on the storytelling that happens around your product. And then, you know, fundamentally really providing beer education
mm-hmm.
to the general market.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like something that a lot of folks are going to benefit from. Now, you just had a very successful Kickstarter campaign, raised over $68,000. So obviously, people believe in what you're doing. And that's also only a fraction of what you need to execute on the project. So talk a little bit more about the fundraising from the business owner perspective of how this is going, what your plans are, and really give us a sense of what's coming in the future.
Yeah. So going a little bit in depth, we have, so when we, this proof of concept that I was touching on earlier, if you talk to lenders and you say, okay, I want to build a brewery, it's going to cost me $305,000 just for my equipment and my build out. They are like, great, how much money do you have? And thus far, we have had a lot of infrastructure in just the build and just being able to sell beer right now. We sell beer in kegs, and so we have to have the kegs. We have to have the handle. There's a lot of infrastructure.
A lot of pieces to it. Yeah.
That goes into business ownership in general, but then having a physical product. And so as we finished this proof of concept, we were actually getting to a point where we're feeling really confident. I started to select my equipment, the equipment that we were going to build. In the brewery, we're talking system sizes. So a 3-barrel brewery, which is probably, it's still a small brewery. Most brewing companies start with at least 16 barrels, 20 barrels. And that just is the size of your system, how much beer you can brew at one time. And when I was brewing 1 barrel, which is 31 gallons, it took me 12 hours to brew that. It takes me 12 hours to brew 20 barrels now. So it's the same amount of time, it takes the same amount of time to actually ferment. You're just yielding higher product.
With larger volume systems.
Right, exactly. Yes. So when you think about what system size you're going to buy, the price isn't linear. So as you double your system size, you're not doubling your price.
Right.
There's fixed costs for a lot of the steel. And once you are expanding it, you're not having to include more legs, more doors, more handles. You know, that's all fixed. But you're just increasing your amount of steel. So when we were looking at the pricing between a few of the different equipment sizes, I started to talk to a lot of brewers and brewery owners around the valley. And everyone, this industry is very open to offering their opinions and also just really welcoming. We have a couple of breweries that are going to be right down the street from us when we are in downtown Phoenix. And we're so excited about that. I think that it's a very harmonious industry. So we were talking to several breweries, and their advice was, do not start with a 3-barrel brewery. You will need to throw more labor toward your brewery just to keep up with the demand of your taproom sales, especially being downtown Phoenix in a very lively area. And so it was of concern to them that we would go out of business if we were going to build something that small.
Because the number of person hours you'd be investing in to produce the quantity you need on a smaller system.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Have somebody, it would be very labor intensive. Somebody would be brewing all the time just to keep up. And so I decided that we were going to increase our system size. Well, when you receive your financing and your lend, the quantity, the dollar figure from lenders that are telling you what you can be approved for, it's not like it is relationship building, but it's kind of just an equation. It's just a simple equation, like how much money they're going to actually lend you versus how much money you've already raised and how much money is in your bank account and your personal assets. And so, you know, that number is pretty much fixed once you get, it varies a little bit from bank to bank. But so once we decided to increase our system size, we had no way of doing that without our community. So I had several people tell me to start a Kickstarter and to launch a Kickstarter. I was very hesitant about it because I've worked in sales my whole career, so I'm really generous with buying dinner, buying drinks, like being the person that, you know, is the one that like will pick up the whole tab for everybody just to have a great time. And so for me to ask for money was really difficult. I think it's difficult for most people to ask for money, but it was one of my biggest struggles was having to go and reach out to people and ask for them to pledge to us and to believe in us. And so that was what Kickstarter was. We just reached out to our community to help us actually build the brewery. So it was a gamble, a total gamble. And if you watched the Kickstarter, about 72 hours before our Kickstarter closed, it was just over 72 hours. We were just about halfway there. So within the last 3 days, we raised more than half of the money that we were trying to raise, which is like stressful.
This was an all or nothing Kickstarter.
All or nothing Kickstarter.
So if you didn't get it all, you didn't get any.
Right, exactly. So like
3 days worth of hustle to seal the deal.
Yeah. And I did it over the holidays and I was thinking it was just like poor timing. And my sister and I had her friends who were all in college still. And so she and her friends were helping me. I had a woman that was so generous and with her time, and Palm Lane Digital is her marketing firm, and she was helping me. And we had like five or six women that were just reaching out to as many people as we could within like really the last 7 days. I didn't want to reach out to people over the holiday. I was just like, I didn't want to bother people. And so as of January 1, it was like all hands on deck. I think we reached out to over 5,000 people on just LinkedIn alone during that time. We were blocked on every single social media outlet except for LinkedIn every single day. So it was just...
Right, because you reach your maximum messaging
right,
limit. Right,
yes. And it was like us personally, Greenwood Brewing, our Instagram, our Facebook, our Twitter. I mean, everything was blocked daily. So you get like a 24-hour block. And but it was just reaching out to as many people as we could and then asking them to reach out to all of their people. And it's really just that extra touch. I think over half of the people who ended up pledging I've never even met. And it was just them believing in our campaign and what we were trying to accomplish and also supporting a business owner that is trying to live a dream. And I think that a lot of people really appreciated that.
Well, I can certainly see that what's compelling about that ask was that it's not just a personal dream. You weren't asking for you. You were asking for what Greenwood Brews is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole idea of connecting people together over a purposeful pint,
mm-hmm.
the idea of Her Story Beer, and, you know, making this more accessible and engaging for women. I mean, there's a lot of compelling aspects to it. As we wind up the interview here, I'm just excited. I would want to keep talking about this for hours because there's so many different things that we can touch on here. Talk for just a minute as we wind this up about what this means for you personally. I'm sure to a certain extent, there's a little bit of a deer in the headlights phenomenon going on because you're just moving from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. You're wearing so many hats. As owner, operator, salesperson, distributor, fundraiser, trainer, everything, right? When you stop and catch your breath, which I hope you do, what is the significance of all this to you personally? I realize that we're like on chapter two of the story and there's a lot more left to go, but what does it mean for you now that you're at this point?
So I actually just received great advice from a friend recently because it is, I think, a lot of people, no matter if they're a business owner or working in corporate job or in a small business or whatever, that you're always on to the next thing, right? You always are thinking of what's next. And this advice was think about your day and and act like today was the goal. And this was where you wanted to get to. And it really is. When I was thinking about the Kickstarter, I mean, during that time, just alone, you know, we're talking about that one small phase. It was like, I can't wait till we get there. And you think that all the time. I can't wait until then. I can't wait until then. But then once you get there, you don't actually take the time to be appreciative and grateful and also just relax and realize, wow, this we did get here. This was actually a recent piece of advice that I think really, really hit home. And it was like, show up today like this is where you wanted to be. And it's so true. I think even when we were starting and even personally, as I started Greenwood Brewing, and today I still get this all the time. It's like, you're not going to be able to do this and you're going to leave corporate America. You're in a six-figure job and you have a propelled life ahead of you that's just like climb, climb, climb. It's very clear. And you're going to leave that all for no income and a big question mark whether or not you're going to be successful. Just this experience has made me realize, or I say this a lot, is you're going to pass your days anyway. Why not do something completely crazy and follow a dream? So personally, it's been really exciting, I think, from that perspective that it's a walking into the unknown, which is way scarier than sitting in a comfortable position and with a big question mark as what the future has to hold. I guess I'm just still in awe that this is even happening. So that question is kind of catching me at a time where I'm like, well, I need to actually sit down and just take some time to realize how far we've come. It's actually on my to-do list to do a life review. This is like something that's has been on my to-do list for like the last month to be able to say, you know, wow, and look back at what we've done. I think if I was going to talk with somebody now that was like, I have this dream, I have this vision, I really think that if I had something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life, this is what I would do. I just want them, like, and I urge them so much now to do it. Because, and I was listening to Business Radio X yesterday, and they kind of touched on this, was we all do have a purpose here. I really do believe that. And you're feeling one way because of there's a reason why you are feeling this intuition or this push to go into a certain direction. And I believe that Greenwood Brewing is that for me. And so a lot of my friends and family, I do the same thing and I preach to them. And I'm like, you need to just do what your body is telling you to do and what your mind is telling you to do, because it's so satisfying. And it's I think your purpose. So and going a little bit on a tangent on that question.
Not at all. I think it's a fabulous way to end this conversation, because there's a real call to action there. Your purpose is something that's found in living it, not in thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I think that planning exercises can be really valuable. Certainly a lot of folks at the beginning of the year feel the need to do something, and that's all fine and good. And if you're the kind of person for whom that is helpful, adds clarity, great, go for it. But every day, the lived actions of that day, the decisions you make, the speed at which you execute, the fullness with which you engage in life is what it's all about. I'm sure you end your days exhausted physically, but it sounds like very inspired mentally and spiritually, as what you're doing is something so much bigger. Mm-hmm. And I think for me personally and for all of us, this is an ethos at Business Radio X. There are these stories out there. You are up to something. And if you're not, and there's something that you want to do, you can. Mm-hmm. Will it all work out? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Will you win at the end of it all? I don't know.
Right.
Is there any better way to spend your life? I do know that there's not.
Right.
This is what it's all about. Megan Greenwood, founder of Greenwood Brewing. I am inspired by you. I'm inspired by what you're creating. How can folks find out more about what you're up to, follow along, sample your brews? Mm-hmm. How do people connect with you?
Yes, you can actually reach out to us. I think the most active we are is on Instagram and Facebook, which is at Greenwood Brewing on both. That's probably where you can find us the most. We do have a website, www.greenwoodbrews.com, and it has where you can find our brews in the area. We do go on and off tap quite quickly, so make sure you call ahead. But that is somewhere where you can find us for sure.
Thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre. We'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.